The next case is 040883, Elyria City Schools Board of Education versus Cobblestone Swear Company Limited and Lorain County Board of Revision. Mr. Hughes for the appellant.
May it please the court, I'm Martin Hughes on behalf of the appellant, Cobblestone Swear. The facts in this case are fairly straightforward, and I don't want to go through them again. I just want to briefly mention a few that are most relevant to where I'll be focusing right now. Cobblestone Swear was developing another center in order to attract Kmart as the anchor tenant, which unfortunately, of course, then immediately rejected the lease when it went bankrupt. It acquired the lease at their existing store. That was a non-negotiable term. What I really want to focus on, what happened next. They had the sublease at the existing store, wanted to reuse it. In order to use it, they had to subdivide it, require the landlord consent. They went 7 months of paying the rent without being able to use it. What happened then? The landlord offered them a take it or leave it price at $5.8 million, which they accepted. There was no other way for them to use their existing property interest, the leasehold interest. And subsequent to that, they made physical changes, did alter the building. The Board of Education filed a complaint in this case, asking that the $5.8 million is the sale price. The Board of Revision did not accept that. They saw the witnesses live, weighed the evidence, and they did increase the value 17% from the auditors, but did not accept the $5.8 million as being indicative of true value. The Board of Education appealed, and on the appeal, there was no further evidence submitted. It was done on the record in the BTA. Where the Board of Education would have still had the burden of proof, did increase the value to $5.8 million, Cobblestone appeal. The issue in this case is whether the Board of Education, which had the burden of proof, submitted the evidence of an arm's length sale. In this case, the sole evidence submitted by the board was the conveyance fee statement. The uncontested evidence and specific finding of the BTA at page 6 of its decision that there were changes made to the property after its purchase. Revised Code 5713.13 provides that the sale price of a property shall not be used if there's been change to the property after the purchase. Nevertheless, the board held that the burden of proof of showing economic duress in this transaction was on Cobblestone. Let's look at what the factors are for showing economic duress, which I believe is made out in this case. I think the cases that are probably the most seminal cases, Lakeside from this court, and what's referred to as the Grange Mutual case, Columbus Board of Education versus BOR. I'm sorry, I would like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal if possible. Okay. In those cases, in each case, the purchaser had an existing interest they wanted to protect, not necessarily land or fee simple in land. They had an interest, a property interest. In Grange, they had acquired a large amount of property looking to do a second tower, knowingly acquired it, knew that there was a parcel they didn't have, made the decision to do that, but then, of course, they were presented with take it or leave it. Similarly, in Lakeside, they had this business, they knew what the risks were, they'd acquired it knowingly, knew those factors, there wasn't a surprise, there was no unjust action by the opposite party. What were the factors that were in common in those three cases? In each case, no other property would solve their problem if they wanted to protect their initial investment. They couldn't go down the street. There were other ones on the market. Only that property would do. And then there were two other indications that showed it was under duress. It was not offered on the open market, and on a take-it-or-leave-it basis, offered only to the ultimate purchaser.
How about Cardinal Savings?
I'm sorry. The Cardinal Savings.
That's the case, the Cleveland case, where they bought the land.
I'm sorry, and I've got it done as the BTA weighing the evidence of whether it was under duress.
Right.
And I'm sorry about the facts of whether it was another property that would do.
Yeah. Your client, as I understand, entered into first a lease with this property and then found out they couldn't use it.
To be honest, I don't know what the record says, what point they found it out. But what was clear is, and I don't know that it matters whether it was surprise or not.
Yeah.
They could have investigated and found out that it was. But they entered into this lease. They had an investment for whatever reason, in the same way that Lakeside or Grange had acquired other property for whatever reason.
Yeah, but they voluntarily entered into this lease and for some rent, I forget the exact amount of the rent right now, but then they tried to divide it.
Yes.
Couldn't, because the landlord wouldn't give his approval. Then the landlord offered them to sell it to him at a price, but they would have had to continue to pay rent for quite a long time. I forget the exact number of years.
It was a long-term lease.
Yeah. But they entered into that agreement voluntarily, didn't they?
I think here's where the focus is, the difference between Grange, for example, and Blodgett, which Lakeside rejected as the test. Blodgett is obviously a test for contracts. And in Blodgett, the focus was on, did the other party do something coercive, some sort of blameworthy act on the other party? And in Lakeside, the court rejected that. It said the focus isn't on what they did. In Lakeside, clearly, that party had entered into what they did and whether they would ever need to acquire that property. They knew it when they entered into. Grange clearly knew that they didn't have that last parcel. They'd acquired it, they'd made plans. And that's the difference, I think, between Blodgett and Lakeside. They entered into it voluntarily, but now they need to, they explore the useful, what can be done with it. Can they sublease it as is? They couldn't. If they could have subleased it, they would. Nobody pays $5.8 million when they don't have to. The testimony was that they had to subdivide it. Now, they have an interest, a property interest, the same as Lakeside or Grange had. What do they do in order to not have that be of no value to them or diminished value? There's only one property that will do. I think the BTA discussed some of the other cases where the address was not found. We added these since the last time I was here. The Dublin case, BTA discussed Dublin City Schools and Southwestern City
but
Schools.
Your client had the option of continuing to pay the rent.
Yes, same as Grange could have left the remaining property undeveloped or built a smaller building.
Yeah.
They could have built a smaller building that wasn't a tower that wrapped around the space they didn't have. Lakeside had the option of accepting the consequences of what they voluntarily and knowingly entered into. The question is here, do you have alternatives? That's the focus. Will another property do? In both Dublin and Southwestern City Schools.
Seems to me one of the differences is in Lakeside, seemed to me what swayed the court a lot was that they testified, we're going to go bankrupt if we don't do this. I didn't see that type of testimony here.
There was Lakeside obviously was limited to the one business they had at that site.
Right.
So the consequences were bankruptcy. Obviously, Grange, Grange Mutual's business. Other than that site, they're not going to go bankrupt.
Yeah.
I think if you want to, but what was the impact on that site, on that particular business, the adjoining property they're looking to protect? Yeah. Obviously, it made the adjoining property for Grange of a dramatically lessened value if they had to just put a one-story building where they could instead of a high-rise. Similarly here, Cobblestone has obviously another shopping center. You know, they have other things that aren't going to make them bankrupt. Although Kmart did collapse at the other place. But that wasn't the issue at the time. But if you focus on the property interest they're trying to protect, this leasehold interest, clearly they're going to pay and have no income if they don't acquire the one and only property that will make that a value.
We don't know how this all balanced out, though, unfortunately. I mean, I don't think there's any evidence in there. You know, they had a choice, it seems to me. They wanted to lease this property at Cobblestone Square. If you want that, you got to do this.
Yes.
And it seems more of a business decision. What were the dire consequences for them if they didn't?
They would have paid a rent on a lease for years to come without any income. Obviously, if you focus on that property alone, it would have been an insolvent property. Same as Lakeside, if you focus on that property alone, it would have been an insolvent property.
We don't know enough about Cobblestone to know, you know, whether this was a small thing or a big thing to Cobblestone doing.
We know it was significant enough for them to put out $5.8 million.
Yeah.
And there is testimony in the record, although this particular county doesn't transcribe the testimony. They summarize the testimony and send a transcript. But there is testimony there generally about the rents and how many years would have to go, and it is a substantial amount.
Right.
I can't tell you the amount off the top of my head, but it was significant enough that people would put out $5.8 million to address the problem and subdivide it. I think each of these, I think that my point is the difference in the focus between voluntarily and a business decision. Grange decided to minimize their losses. They certainly weren't going to make their estimated rate of return by overpaying for a piece of property. Lakeside decided to minimize their losses in order to voluntarily minimize their losses.
Let me ask you another question, Mr. Hughes. In these type of cases, it seems to me people come in and say, well, we were under duress, we had to buy this, we overpaid. What's the evidence that they overpaid? That this isn't the true value. You know, maybe this thing was worth $5.6 million, so they paid $5.8.
Well, in those other cases, there was never an enunciation pronounced that the property owner has the burden of proving an alternative value. I think, frankly, in this case, where you have additions to the property afterwards, the burden should have never shifted.
But what do you? What's the board supposed to do in a case like that? Somebody comes in and said, as I remember in the Lakeside case, they had an appraisal showing that the property should have been worth, I don't know, some substantially lesser value than what they paid for it. What do you do? We send this back to the board. Now, what's the board do?
Well, they can do what they do is shift on burden of proof. The real question is, who has to go out and put this proof on? If somebody wants to rely upon a conveyance fee statement in order to get a 70% increase in value, where there is economic duress and there have been alterations of properties post-sale, who should put out the money and go first? Now, it's like I can make an accusation and say, here it is, you go, the burden shifts to you, you put out the money, you go get the appraisal.
Haven't we generally held that if you put on, that's a prima facie case?
Put on the conveyance fee statement, that's generally true. There'd be certain exceptions. For example, not sufficient proximity in time. One. Another one would be the statutory one. Says if there's post-sale improvements, it shall not be used as the true value of the property. That'd be clearly another one. Those are clearly exceptions to that burden-shifting presumption.
Now, say that last one again. You lost me a little bit on that.
5713.13 provides the sale price in an arm's length transaction between a willing seller and a willing buyer shall not be considered the true value of the property sold if subsequent to the sale be an improvement is added to the property. The BTA found that there were improvements to this property.
How does that, in your, how, what improvement has been added?
Well, there was changes to the walls of the property, the subdivide. There were other mentions of the BTA. They made findings about what had been done. There are unquestionably property on the lien date is physically different than the property on the sale date.
And was that supposed, you're saying that that would decrease the value?
The statute doesn't say which way it has to go. It just says it shall not. And I think it reflects what's inherent in the law is that there is no assumption that cost always produces value. Some changes don't work out. And I think that's why it has to be that way, unless we want to carve out an exception, say sometimes cost is value. For each of the cases the BTA cites for the proposition that whether it was not economic duress, they discussed each of those places the lease had expired and the person had options available. There were other places nearby. In fact, one of them, the options were higher priced. The subject property was the best deal available. That's a difference here. It's a clear difference from each of those cases. Finally, I guess I would ask the converse. What if, as part of this transaction, Cobblestone Square had said to Kmart, gee, you have a below market lease on that property. As a part of letting you to move to our Moon Mall, we want to acquire that below market lease. And then they went to the owner and said, we can pay you a below market rent for the next 10 years. However, we'll purchase for you for $2 million. In that case, would we all be saying, would the Board of Education be saying the value is $2 million? I don't think so.
Okay, thanks. You reserve your time.
Yes, thanks.
Mr. Armstrong.
Good morning. My name is Timothy Armstrong. I'm here representing the Board of Education of the City of Elyria. The taxpayer this morning asked the court and you to consider unreported Court of Appeals cases like Grange. And I would note that in the Lakeside decision that this court had, the Grange case that he's referring to was specifically referred to quite extensively. And the position of the court in Lakeside was, well, we're going to resolve this dispute, and here's the new standard. And Lakeside's the standard. So I don't think Grange has any validity. The Cardinal Savings case was also a case where Cardinal bought the last piece of an assemblage. And that came up to the court, and the court said, the sale is good. You have to take into account the fact that you were creating a market. And so Cardinal Federal case was not overruled by Lakeside. Parkwood Iron case was not overruled in Lakeside. Parkwood Iron was another case of a competitor buying an adjoining property to add to his next door property. So I think that the issue we're talking about here is really the Lakeside case and the standards. And the facts in this case come way, way short of the facts that the court found in Lakeside. The only claim that's similar is that there was a non-negotiable price from the seller. But that's not sufficient to establish that there was duress on the part of the purchaser.
What were the lease payments on this?
Pardon me?
Do you remember what the lease payments were? Right,
lease payments were slightly under $6 a square foot. They would have come to like $579,000, $580,000 a year. That's the Kmart lease we're talking about?
Right.
Yes.
And how long did it have to run?
From 2009. And this transaction occurred in 2000.
So we come pretty close to the selling price.
Well, I think that it was a triple net lease. Besides, the taxpayer, I mean, the tenant had to pay operating costs and real estate taxes and all those other matters also. So, of course, triple net is not exactly all cash. There are some operating expenses, but you apply a common 10% capitalization rate to the income stream and you come very close to the sale price. But as was noted this morning, this record is devoid of any evidence about what the value of the property was. We have a sale price, which is prima facie, which the school board brought to the Board of Education, brought to the Board of Revision, and to the BTA. Prima facie case arose, and it was the burden on the taxpayer to show that the value was something else. They failed in duress, and they failed to offer any evidence of what the property should be in any other circumstance by appraisal evidence or the rest. The court was correct in observing that in Lakeside, there was an appraisal report at about half the sale price. And the court went to note about the desperate efforts to obtain sufficient financing and that the normal lender for Lakeside wouldn't loan and they had to get grants and they had to pull money from three or four sources. We hear nothing about this. This was a cash deal, I believe. Cobblestone paid cash for it. They didn't have to finance it.
We don't know anything about Cobblestone.
No. Well, Cobblestone, the taxpayer. And Cobblestone, the other shopping center, but I'm talking about the taxpayer here. We show nothing about this. We merely show that the taxpayer here started a chain of events. It came over and plucked a tenant out of one building and inserted it into its other building. And in doing so, it knew it was under a lease, and it's unreasonable to think that they didn't know what the lease was and review the lease. They stepped right into the shoes of Kmart in that lease, knowingly, voluntarily, and in furtherance of their own business purposes. Not the landlord's, not Kmart's, their own. And once they got inside, then they had the obligation to lease the property, of course. So when they purchased the property, they purchased exactly what the property that they had put in motion, all the facts and circumstances arising, they put in motion. Kmart had no leverage against them. The owner of the property had no leverage unless it's the court would say that that the enforcement of lease terms by a landlord is somehow converted into coercion. Well, that's not a Lakeside standard. That becomes, then there is no standard whatsoever. Lakeside standard showed that those facts were such that the price was clearly excessive based upon independent objective evidence, bankers, financing, appraisal, and that the taxpayer or the purchaser truly had no choice except buy the property or go into bankruptcy. We haven't any facts anywhere close to anything like this. They also was mentioned that subsequent improvements to the property somehow invalidate the sale price. I would suggest to the court.
If they improved it afterwards, I guess what I would have read that statute saying, okay, if you put improvements on the property, in other words, if I buy the property and it's vacant and I put a building on it, yeah, that should be valued, I guess.
Yes, I think improvement here talks about a building, and it's a technical term in that statute. And improvements that were referenced this morning merely mean tenant improvements, rehab, which is not the same thing.
Well, I think they contend that they divided the property somehow. I don't quite understand that. Apparently put a wall down.
Put a wall, yes. But in October of 2000, Kmart vacated and relocated into the other shopping center. January 1st, 2001, only 2 months later, is the tax lien date. That's the valuation date we're talking about. The sale was in May. We're talking about the value of the property in between those two dates. So improvements that happened after May would not affect the value on January 1st, 2001, and the sale price relates to that time. So I don't believe that the sale price should not be used. I think it is the best evidence of value, and the Board of Tax Appeals was correct in applying the sale price. I think the Board of Tax Appeals made determinations of the facts and credibility of the witnesses on the claim of economic duress, and they found them lacking. This court, just last month, in March, decided the case DAC PLL versus Franklin County Board of Revision, decided on March 2nd, and they reemphasized that it's the duty of the Board of Tax Appeals to weigh evidence and the credibility of witnesses, and that this court is not a super board of tax appeals to reexamine those facts. Valuation is a question of fact, and the Board of Tax Appeals determined it on the facts. They found that the taxpayer had not proven duress. And in looking at those facts, the Board of Tax Appeals held up the Lakeside legal standard and applied the facts to the correct standard. So the Board of Tax Appeals did not misapply the law, and it made a reasonable and fair interpretation of the facts in the record and came to the right conclusion. I would like to reserve a minute of my time, if I may.
No. You don't have a cross appeal here.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Mr. Hughes, you have 1 minute.
Having been the counsel on DAC PLL, I know it was not an economic duress case. One thing about the definition of the words improvement, that is statutorily defined. A new building is defined as a structure by statute. Structure is building or fence. Improvement does include new walls.
New walls?
Yes.
Okay.
As it's statutorily
defined.
But
putting new walls on, I guess where I'm confused, it seems to me that argues against your case because that would improve the value, wouldn't it?
An improvement does not mean an increase in value, as in this statute. It would for a TIF. But in this case, the statutory definition does not. You'd normally think, why would you expend money that's going to increase the value? But of course, why would you pay $5.8 million if you could just sublease your existing lease? You know, and people, it's like Pingay said, it's common sense. Why wouldn't he have sold them for $74,000 each if he could, the best he could do? Yeah. In the case, why would they buy it if they could have just subleased the property? They had almost 10-year obligation to pay rent on a property they couldn't use. Did Lakeside enter into it knowingly? Absolutely. They did.
Your time is up.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. Case will be submitted to the court. You will be advised of the result.